Fly and Dixie Podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, and featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse Analysts, and my Homewood homie, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, another great show on tap. May Madness is upon us, and we will break down all 8 first-round matchups this weekend. And our friend Ed Lee from the Baltimore Sun will sit in with us as we go through Saturday and Sunday's incredible NCAA tournament matchups. A lot to talk about, Dixie, so let's get it. Dixie, the road to Charlottesville has already begun. We're recording this on Wednesday night, and it looks like Jacksonville and Marist are going to advance from the play-in games to be in the first round. You've been all over the place covering lacrosse the last 3 months. How are you feeling going into May?
Good. I think it's a tournament that's as wide open as ever, as this season has been. There's no clear, definitive favorite. You look at teams that are coming into this tournament with momentum. Princeton winning the Ivy League. Richmond did not falter in the Atlantic 10. Virginia, really dominant performances this past weekend in Charlotte to capture the ACC title. Penn State put it all together. And then Army. I saw Army in person last weekend up at West Point as they defeated Loyola in the Patriot League Championship game. So this is a wide-open tournament. Those are the teams that are coming in with momentum. But, you know, I know you're a big basketball guy, college basketball. I know Ed is as well. How many times we fall in the trap that a certain team wins the Big Ten or wins the ACC, and you're like, oh, they're going to the Final Four. And then they lose in the second round or something like that. So maybe teams that didn't have the success this past weekend, it was a learning experience for them, and they'll recalibrate and get ready for a run. But really, this is as wide open as any year that I can remember over the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah, no doubt. That's what's going to make this month so much fun. Let's get right into bringing our guest this week, Ed Lee. Since joining the Baltimore Sun in 1995, Ed's been covering college sports and general assignment interests with a particular emphasis on Maryland Terrapin football, Maryland basketball, and in the spring he covers college lacrosse. He's also covered the Ravens, the Commanders, high school sports, done it all for the Baltimore Sun. Ed, thank you for joining us and welcome into the D-Fly Dixie podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
So Ed, you've had a busy spring. And I read you all the time. We go way back. You've written some great pieces this spring and really a hot topic, not only in this area, in the Baltimore area, but it really got legs nationally, was the situation at UMBC with not only the men's lacrosse program being put in a really tough spot going back into the fall of 2025, but obviously the softball situation. Have you ever seen, I mean, let's talk about Ryan Moran and the men's lacrosse situation exclusively. Have you ever seen anything like that in your journalism career, the way a situation like that was handled and really dragged on, and then how it reached its conclusion?
No, I haven't. You know, and someone pointed out to me that I think it was Michigan that may have had a couple of scandals, maybe 5 or 6 years ago that happened one after another. But because it was Michigan, it was kind of off my radar. So to have it happen at UMBC, much closer to home, yeah, it was just a bewildering past, 9, 8 months, particularly for lacrosse. Ryan Moran, the players, the coaches. I'm kind of at a loss for words to explain what happened because even I don't understand it fully, what went on behind the scenes. But, it's clear that due to allegations of some sort by a player against a teammate, that's what led to Ryan being placed on administrative leave. But the curious part is, why the investigation dragged so long and why there was no, communication from the administration to parents or players, no communication with the coaches, and two, why nothing was done until, April 2nd, when Ryan Moran and his lawyer said that they had met terms for reinstatement, and then a week later, or actually 6 days later, Tiffany Tucker had told Ryan Moran that he could either retire or get fired. And he chose not to retire. So then on April 9th, she fired him. But it's just, I can't imagine kind of the roller coaster ride of emotions within that program. And I think the people who are most damaged by this are the players. You know, they had a promising season. They believed that with the players they had returning, that they could challenge for an American East championship. And it's hard to argue otherwise. I mean, Connor McMahon was the reigning goalkeeper of the year. Ryan Moran was the reigning coach of the year. So, you know, you have those pieces. It would seem you have the ingredients for success. But, you know, without Ryan Moran, they struggled at the outset. But they made a comeback, and a lot of people credit Craig Chick, Nick Griffin, Luke Schilling for kind of rallying the troops. And so in the face of adversity, they had unprecedented success. But it's a shame that it had to come to that.
Yeah, big time. And you know, you mentioned Tiffany Tucker. That's the athletic director. From your journalism, you also got access to, looks like, the school president. Yeah. And for you to sit here after all those interactions and all that legwork to still say, I don't know what the heck happened. That speaks volumes. The one thing, and I think you addressed this on your social medias as you were getting questions, the player who made the allegations was never identified. Right. And a lot of folks wanted that individual identified. Why is there a rule to that?
Yeah, so at the paper, we have a rule that says we cannot identify victims of sexual misconduct, sexual assault, anything related in that area. And because this did involve an allegation of, quote, sexual misconduct, unquote, therefore we were not allowed to name the accuser. And I get that people want to know that, but I'm just not at liberty to say.
Sure. Yeah. No, you got to follow the rules. You know, you got to respect your employer's policies. The other thing I just wanted to touch on before we dive into the tournament, you put together a piece on Maryland, and we're going to talk about this as the show goes on. For the first time in 22 years, the Terrapins are not in the NCAA tournament. It was a little bit of an odd stretch for you with respect to when you thought you were going to have access to John Tillman, and then when you actually did hear from Coach.
Yeah, I mean, you know, usually in the past when we've had Selection Sunday, we've been able to talk to John afterwards to get his thoughts on, you know, the bracket, how they felt about where they were seated. So I had reached out to the team spokeswoman the day before to find out, hey, are we going to get John again? Knowing that, obviously, their status was very uncertain. So when she said that John would address the media on Monday, yeah, it's a little bit surprising, but okay, we'll get him back the next day. But then, you know, nothing came about for most of Monday until finally she said that he's not available. So it was odd again. Nothing on Tuesday until finally, like maybe Tuesday late afternoon, when they said that John would talk Wednesday. Now, I will say this. During the regular season, John's weekly Zoom with media was Wednesdays. So maybe that had something to do with it. But if that was the case, why not just say that in the beginning? Just say, hey, John won't talk until we'll have a regular weekly Zoom on Wednesday. If they had said that in the beginning, that would have made sense. But to kind of drag it out, yeah, it's a little bit unexpected.
Yeah. And maybe a little bit unprecedented during Coach Tillman's time, you know, so maybe they didn't know how to, you know, really handle it in their best interests.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, and, you know, he's always been one to be upfront and say, look, like he did today, he said he put the blame on himself. He said he wasn't going to blame players. He wasn't going to blame the selection committee. So I was a little bit surprised that, you know, there was that delay until 3 days after Selection Sunday.
While we're on the subject of local college sports in the Maryland area, you've been covering for the Baltimore Sun Terps for a long time. And not just the the men's lacrosse team not making the tournament for the first time in 20 years, but Maryland football team with a losing record, Maryland basketball team with a losing record. I know you're a Maryland grad, but what's the morale like in College Park right now?
Well, I don't think it's good right now. Obviously, football and basketball are kind of the drivers of revenue and a lot of fan interest in College Park. And, you know, the lack of success was perhaps unprecedented. You know, obviously the football team, they fared poorly in the Big Ten. Another blight in terms of Mike Locksley's resume. But there was hope that with Buzz Williams coming back, or not coming back, but being hired, he would revive the basketball program or maintain the same standards that they had last year under Kevin Willard. But instead, they matched the school record for most losses in a season. So when you combine those two, yeah, there was a lot of pessimism. And there still is, I think. Because if you think about it, also men's soccer, which I think at one point had been ranked number one during the regular season, they lost to, I believe, an unseeded team in the round of 16, or maybe just before the College Cup. And then the women's basketball team, I believe, lost in the round of 32.
And they were home. And there were high hopes for the Lady Terps as well. I think they were like number 10 preseason.
Right. I'm sorry, not at home, but at, I think it was. It's North Carolina or Duke. They lost when there, but it's been a terrible year, and things haven't gotten any better with men's lacrosse not even being invited to a tournament. So it's unfair to say this, but a lot rests on the women's lacrosse team. You know, they're number three seed on their side. If they were to get to the Final Four, there'd be an uptick. There'd be some signs of hope. Now, granted, there's a lot of optimism about football and basketball for the upcoming year. Maybe things will turn around, but yeah, it's been a pretty down year in College Park.
Well, basketball in a span of like 5 or 7 days, Buzz Williams got his new starting five, right?
Yeah. And
it's crazy.
Yeah, and the according to recruiting analysts, it's their team right now, which include transfers and freshman, I believe, is ranked, if not top five, top 10 in the country in terms of returning.
Always next year.
I tell you what.
Always next year.
Like, okay, so every morning, my wife and I, as we're getting ready for work, getting our day going, we'll listen to C4 and Brian Neiman on WBAL. And they have a sports segment. That's one of their sports folks does it. And it's always Orioles Ravens. And if they stray from that, it's Terp basketball or, something like that. But they made a point on Monday morning to mention that Maryland had missed the NCAA tournament in lacrosse. And Brian Neiman was just like spot on with it. He goes, well, they didn't do this, they didn't do that, and they didn't do this. And I'm like, wow, I never knew the guy knew so much about Maryland lacrosse. It was pretty interesting. So I think it just kind of illustrates how deep the pride runs with Terrapin lacrosse, both the men's and women's programs in this area.
Agreed.
All right, let's move on. Let's get to the main event here, which is the NCAA Men's Lacrosse Tournament and the teams that are actually playing for a national championship. First, let's set the table. We're a few days after the selection show. We've all had time to process it. Any general thoughts on it before we start breaking down games?
For the most part, I didn't really have any significant arguments with the bracket. I mean, I get, sure, you could. There was probably some umbrage down in Richmond down in Richmond that they weren't a number three seed. But I think if you looked at body of work, North Carolina is right up there with Richmond. So, and I don't think being a four seed is such a slight, in the grand scheme of things. You know, Duke making it. You know, it seemed to me that the committee weighed quality wins, and the fact that Duke beat North Carolina is a quality win. So, they got one of the at-large bids. Maryland didn't have those quality wins; they had one. Against Virginia, and then even that was a triple overtime game at home, whereas I believe Duke and Yale both won big games on the road. So I think that also played a role. So, you know, there, it's also, I think I saw some people complaining about Virginia being a 5 seed. I mean, they're probably one of the hottest teams right now. So, you know, the fact that they've been able to get hot at the right time, sure, I could see them being rewarded for that.
Yeah, and I think what people fail to realize or don't want to realize at times is that a win in February has just as much value as a win in April or May. So it can't be, well, they're the hottest team in the country right now. Well, yeah, you know, you take Virginia's case, they lost to Towson, and that loss became magnified with the Tigers losing in the CAA final to Stony Brook. And it's a whole thing, right? And I think that, and I haven't read the piece yet, I think it was on US Lacrosse, about a revamped metric going forward. I haven't read it yet because it's not here yet. But obviously the RPI is a flawed system. It was designed for college basketball with over 300 teams. It doesn't work in lacrosse. But in talking with some coaches about the possibility of shifting to a different metric, people will do what Duke did this year. They'll play less games. They'll strategically schedule. And then they'll let their conference carry them. So a lot of people feel like, and the coaches that I spoke with about this, I said, okay, what comes first? A revamp of the RPI, or you stop playing lacrosse in the dead of winter? And they said, well, actually, that kind of goes hand in hand because you can push the season back a little bit because you'll play less games. So the coaches will play less games with a revamped metric comparable to or in the line of RPI. You know, you kind of see it right now with Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a team that only plays 12 regular season games, where a lot play 14, 15, some 16. Notre Dame only plays 12 right now. Did Duke game the system? I'm not here to say yes or no, but I think that people feel like this set a wicked precedent. But remember, back in the day, Penn used to do this. Penn would beat Duke in February, and then let's say they didn't even make the Ivy League tournament, but they still made the NCAAs because that win over Duke held so much value come on Selection Sunday. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. My other thoughts, guys, I know there was a little bit of an argument. So the play-in games, which were played tonight, Jacksonville beating Robert Morris, Marist beating Stony Brook, those are supposed to be the four highest RPIs, those teams. And Robert Morris actually has an RPI of 21. UAlbany has an RPI of 22. So some folks were like, why is Robert Morris playing Jacksonville? That should be the Danes. So that was another little sticky wicket right there. And then some folks took exception to Hopkins having to go on the road, and Penn State got the 8th seed and takes on Army at Panzer. Well, in essence, the Big Ten final became the play-in game for a seed versus being on the road with the way things shook out. Had Virginia not won the ACC, maybe both Penn State and Hopkins would have been at home for the first round, but that didn't happen. So there you have it. So anyway, that's my dime store review. Other than the fact that the bracket was leaked about an hour before the actual selection show in Bristol. That was crazy, man.
I've never seen anything like that before.
No. And you know what? I don't know if it's happened in other sports, so I'm just going to go and say only in lacrosse would that happen.
All right. Hey, let's move on to the game previews. A reminder that the Defiant Dixie podcast is brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions and producing sweet vests. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. All right, let's get to Saturday's games. We'll do these chronologically, starting with the noon game. All of these games are available to watch on ESPNU. I have to start by saying, what's my gripe? My biggest gripe, Dixie, is the game time starting all at the same time. and they played the two games tonight, both at 7 o'clock on ESPN Plus. Like, come on. Like, you can't start one at 5:30 and one at 7:30, or stagger them just a little. One at 6, one at 6:30. So you can, you know, you don't have to sit at half times at the same time. And it's, Ed, this is my biggest pet peeve. I don't understand for fans of lacrosse.
He's got a lot of pet peeves.
Why can't we do it like we're going to do it for these games? So there's a noon game. There's a 2:30 game, a 5 game, and a 7:30 game. That gives us about 10 straight hours of incredible lacrosse on Saturday and Sunday. And this is the way it should be all season long. We should figure it out so we can view the best games in different time windows and everyone can enjoy it. The first game on Saturday is the University of Albany will travel to the number 3 seed, North Carolina. Albany enters the game 11-5 on the season. They are the champions of the America East. North Carolina is an at-large selection. They are 12-4 on the season. They have 8 top 20 wins, but they have lost 3 of their last 5. And there's some doubt, injury concern, possibly about their best player, Owen Duffy. Dixie, this will be a great scene in Chapel Hill on Saturday at noon. What are your thoughts on this game?
Well, first and foremost, I'm calling this game on ESPNU with Mike Murphy, former Penn coach. So excited to work with Coach Murphy. I'm excited for this game. When you look at Richmond right off the bat, the player that jumps out is Silas Richmond, a 6'4 senior from Delta, British Columbia, America East Offensive Player of the Year. He was a first-round draft pick of the Water Dogs, number 5 pick overall in the PLL draft. But he's not the only really good player on this team. They've got Colton Marquise, who's a Johns Hopkins transfer. I was really impressed with Ben Wimmer in the America East Championship game against Vermont. Defensively, Max Neeson, Jacob Smith, some really sturdy defenders. This is a team that averages just over 11 goals a game. And they're going into Chapel Hill to take on a North Carolina team that beat Syracuse in pretty gritty fashion in the semifinals of the ACC tournament 12-10, where Owen Duffy had 6 assists. And their goaltender, Josh Marcus, played a very strong game. And then they score the first 2 goals against Virginia this past Sunday in the ACC championship. And then just everything just kind of fell apart, including what you just mentioned, the injury to Owen Duffy. So not sure of his status, but it's hard to feel sorry, if that's the right word, for North Carolina with the talent that they have. Brady Wambach at the faceoff dot, and they announced a tour time finalist this week. So it's Owen Duffy, Sean Light of Notre Dame, Nate Kibiri, Princeton, Joey Spallina, Syracuse, and Willem Firth of Cornell. I honestly, in my heart of hearts, really think that Brady Wambach should have been in that batch, facing off around 66-67%. So I think that if you're Albany, you have to find a way to compete at the faceoff dot. They did go 50-50 against Vermont, and the countermounts faceoff man was the America East faceoff specialist of the year. But Brady Wambach is a different animal. And, I think the athleticism of Carolina, their depth, will be on display in this game against a really tough UAlbany team.
Yeah, I love Albany. I love Scott Maher. He's always been a great source, coach, someone to talk to. And, he gives his players so much freedom to kind of like freewheel just create whenever they want to at their own whim. I also love the story that, them doing this for the late Liam Gleason, playing in his honor and in his memory. And it's one of those stories that really tugs at your heart. And you love to see a team that is trying to do that for someone and then to have success in this year. But in terms of on the field, I think North Carolina is just overpowering. I mean, my colleague Mike Preston saw them play Harvard at Archbishop Spalding earlier in the year, and he says that North Carolina is the fastest team he has seen in person this year. Just, he said when they are moving and everything's in rhythm and they're in a groove, it's hard to stop them. They're just like a locomotive. And so, based on that, I think it's great to see Albany and in the postseason, and I'm sure they're going to do everything they can to muck it up and maybe give North Carolina run for its money, but I think the Tar Heels just have a little bit too much, pretty much in all facets of the field.
All right, I'm with you, Ed. But you and I are going to pick each of these games. We'll let Dixie skate by as usual. But I'm going to take the Tar Heels also in this game. So we're 2-0 on the Tar Heels. In the second game of the day at 2:30, number 8 Penn State, who's 9-5, the champions of the Big Ten, will host the Army Black Knights, who are 13-3 and are the Patriot League automatic qualifier. Great to see Army get in the tournament after stumbling in the Patriot League tournament the last 2 years. Penn State's not only the Big Ten champs, they're the Ivy League champs this year with wins over Princeton, Cornell, and Yale, three teams that made the Ivy League.
How about that?
Semifinals. This should be a really great game, maybe one of the most even games of the first round. And Ed, I'll let you start with your take on it.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the quality wins that Penn State had, but then I also think back to the losses, the kind of like befuddling losses they had. Villanova, Navy, I'm sure there's
Michigan.
One more. I think there's one.
Michigan, I'm sorry? In the regular season.
Michigan, yeah, right. And so it's hard for me to track, like, what kind of team are we talking about here? Are we talking about the one that stumbled early on or the one that, you know, suffocated Maryland in the semifinals and then spanked Johns Hopkins in the final and, you know, is played that up to the point where they got the number 8 seed and a home game in the first round? So I've been impressed with them that to that point. But I think with Army, I mean, the one thing that you know about an Army team is they're going to play defense. They're very disciplined. They don't really make too many mistakes. They don't commit any unnecessary penalties. They're very buttoned up on that side of the field. And so they make it difficult for offenses to score. And Penn State, they're not terrible at scoring, but they're not great either. And so I think this comes down to whether Penn State can find those gaps in Army's defense. And I don't think Army's defense will show much of that. And I think Army's offense will do just enough to find holes in Penn State's defense to put some goals up on the scoreboard. So if I had to lean towards one team, I'm leaning towards Army.
Jules Henneberg, we'll be with Mike Corey for this one on ESPNU. Big question mark, Hunter Aquino, who left the Big Ten championship game against Johns Hopkins. I want to say it was early-ish fourth quarter with what looked to be some type of lower body discomfort. He didn't come back into the game. They're a different team with Aquino in the lineup, as well as Andrew Beard. Those two were spectacular this past weekend in the Big Ten tournament. Ford and Nittany Lions, Preston Hawkins, freshman goaltender, played very, very well. And they've got a two-headed tandem at the face-off dot with Kobe Baldwin and Reed Gills. This is a replay of a quarterfinal game, what was it, 2024, at the Naval Academy, where Penn State really just had to hold on at the end of the game to beat Army. Like I mentioned earlier, I saw the Black Knights play in person at Mikey Stadium this past Sunday. Sean Byrne is a terrific goaltender. Evan Plunkett is an outstanding midfielder. And they've got Evan Plunkett's younger brother, Hill Plunkett, was just jamming the ball down low to Braden Fountain, just making skip passes against the Loyola zone. And the Greyhounds unfortunately didn't have any answers for Army. With my son being a grad assistant at Loyola, I'm not going to say it's great to see Army back in the postseason, but a lot of fans are happy that Army finally got over that hump of the last two seasons of disappointments where they were clearly the best team in the Patriot League and just stumbled in the tournament. This will be a fantastic game. I hope that the Panzer faithful show up because that's a definitive home field advantage for the Nittany Lions and just an outstanding environment for college lacrosse. But this should be a physical game between two teams that like to get after it. And, you know, one's a service academy, one is we are, but I think they both have a very much lunch pail, hard hat mentality to them.
I'm with Ed. I'm going to take Army in an upset. Penn State's a 2.5-goal favorite in this game. I'm going to take Army for the reasons that Ed said. That was a coin flip for me, but Ed, you persuaded me. So we'll go with the Black Knights.
That's what Ed Lee does, man. He gets you to do what he wants you to do.
That's the first time someone's ever publicly said that I persuaded them.
All right, moving on. The Blue Jays from Johns Hopkins University, 9-5. They're an at-large team. They're unseeded as the number 8 RPI team on the road at the number 7 seed, Cornell, who's 11-4, also an at-large team, defending national champs, RPI of 5. This is the first time these two schools have met on a lacrosse field since 1987. That is hard to believe with the history and tradition that these two programs have had, that they haven't met, been matched up in an NCAA tournament, as they were many times in the 70s and 80s. And we can see, you know, some of the, you know, Peter Milliman used to coach at Cornell. Dave Petromala was a longtime coach at Hopkins, coached at Cornell before he came to Hopkins. So there, I can see why they wouldn't have scheduled each other, but it's just amazing that they haven't played. But this will be a sensational game at 5 o'clock on ESPNU in Ithaca, New York. Dixie, what are your thoughts on the Blue Jays and Big Red?
So these guys used to scrimmage each other when Def Tamburoni and Dave Petromala were at the schools respectively. I reffed one of them one time, and it was a February scrimmage before they started playing on February 1st. The start dates were more, you know, third, fourth week of February. Look, this is a great matchup. And the 1987 meeting was for the national championship at Rutgers Stadium. And Johns Hopkins won that game. When you look at Hopkins, what has me concerned is the face-off. Jack Cascadden for Cornell is a beast. And Joe Hobot was okay this past weekend. He wasn't fantastic. Reese DeSico off the wing is terrific. But, you know, unfortunately, this is the third game that we're talking about. We're going to talk about another injury, and that's Quentin Kilrain for the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays. He went down, leg got rolled up on in the semifinal game against Michigan up at Rutgers. Everything that I can tell, he will not be available for this game. And I think that Hopkins misses him for his leadership, solo junior captain. And then also, he is an essential cog of running the field from defense to offense in transition. And without him, you saw Hopkins really lack that against Penn State. The other thing is Matt Collison just looked exhausted on Saturday in the Penn State game. He was not a factor, didn't handle the ball much. So hopefully for Blue Jay Nation, he can kind of figure it out and get back into relative form. The one player on the field that is a difference maker, and I think can be a difference maker in this game, is Orange Alinas for Johns Hopkins. He's been so solid. Going up against a Cornell team that'll be at home, they got shellacked in the championship game against Princeton. But still, you know, Goldstein and Firth, and they're just so well coached. They're so hard to beat in Ithaca for the most part. I do know that, you know, you mentioned that Yale win on the road was against Cornell, Ed. That really went a long way on Selection Sunday for the Bulldogs. But I just see this being a fun game. It'll be great to see the colors. You know, hopefully Hopkins wears their Columbia blues and Cornell's going to wear the all whites. It'll be have that classic feel to it.
Yeah, for me, because I'm so kind of Baltimore, Maryland centric, my focus for this game is primarily on Johns Hopkins. And, for the same reasons that Mark has already laid out, you know, the Quentin Kilrain injury, I think, looms large. I mean, what Will Schaller is to Maryland, Quentin Kilrain is to Johns Hopkins. Without him on that defense, I think that unit suffers. And Oren, like Mark said, has been playing superbly this year, you know, and he's had to because that defense has sometimes lagged a little bit. But can he be consistent enough in the net, particularly in the postseason? And then, you know, offensively, I think one of the strengths of this unit is that they don't have that kind of superstar. So therefore, opposing defenses can't just key in on one guy. They have to consider all these guys, all six guys, and then you spread them out a little bit. But on the flip side of that is Hopkins doesn't have that go-to guy. Like if they need a goal when the chips are down, or you know they need some momentum. So it's kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario, I think, for Hopkins' offense. In this case, I like Cornell a little bit more. I think that they have more firepower. They have to play at home, you know, and you know they're coming off the vibes of last season when they were the national champion. And I think those intangibles will probably play out to them winning on Saturday.
Another player I should mention to watch out for, A.J. Nikolic, a middie for Cornell. He's missed a lot of the season due to injury, but he's come back the last couple weeks, and he had two goals in each of the games in the Ivy League tournament against Harvard and against Princeton for Cornell. He'll be a handful for Hopkins to match up on.
A reminder, this game is at 5 o'clock. It's the third game of the day, and you know I'm a Blue Jay through and through. But I'm going to go with the Big Red also. They're 2.5 goal favorites, and that seems manageable for them considering Hopkins' injuries and the way they played against Penn State. So I'm going to go with Cornell also, and you're taking the Big Red?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. All right, last game of the day. This should be in the most electric atmosphere of the first round. Duke is at number 4 seed Richmond in Robins Stadium at 7:30 at night. It's Richmond's first ever NCAA tournament game on their campus. Richmond is the A-10 regular and tournament champion. They got the automatic qualifier, number 3 in the RPI. Duke managed to make the field with a quality win against North Carolina in the regular season finale, and probably benefited from not playing in the ACC tournament and taking a potential loss.
Yeah, I mean, Duke. Its pedigree is obviously known, well known. They're the championship team. John Donowski is one of the greatest coaches in the sport today. And, you know, I kind of agree with what Mark had laid out earlier about them having perhaps a weaker schedule than their peers. And so therefore I question, you know, how strong is this team? And then I look at Richmond. I mean, Richmond has beaten, correct wrong here, Cornell, Virginia, and Georgetown. You know, three teams in the field. Their only loss is to Notre Dame. And sure, you could say, well, they play in the Atlantic 10. It's not as good as ACC. You can make that argument. But I think that they've proven themselves non-conference-wise. And I think them playing at home, there'll be a lot of excitement. There'll be a lot of fervor in Richmond for this game. I hope the fans come out and make it difficult for Duke and make it loud. And if I had to choose a team, I'm going with the home team in this one. I like Richmond.
Should mention the Hopkins-Cornell game. That'll be Anish and Quint. And that 87 championship game, the goalie for Hopkins was Quint. So he makes he's been to Ithaca a bunch of times as a broadcaster, but now he gets to call Hopkins against Cornell. And this game will be Drew Carter and Paul Carcaterra to the nightcap from Richmond. Everybody's up in arms about the Tuoratan finalist and why was this player included? Why wasn't this player included? I'll just say, why wasn't Aiden O'Neill for Richmond included? 76 points, 34 and 42. Not too shabby, right? Shooting about 35%. Is Richmond this year's Ohio State, meaning they get the tough draw at home as a reward for a record-setting season? Rewind to a year ago, Ohio State beats Notre Dame in the regular season and wins the Big Ten Tournament Championship, and as a reward, they get a home game, but they get the Fighting Irish, and things did not go well for Ohio State that day. Are we looking at that? Even though they didn't play in the regular season, are we looking at that for Richmond and Duke? Keep in mind, consideration, travel considerations are gigantic in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Duke going up to Richmond. Let's say Virginia didn't win the ACC tournament. I bet they would be going to Richmond for the first round game. But now it's Duke. And I saw Duke in person down in Chapel Hill a couple weeks ago. And I'm thinking to myself, how is this team over in the ACC? You know, Duke decided not to participate in the quote unquote ACC Ivy League challenge this year. So they dropped Penn and Princeton off their schedule. Definitely hurt their RPI. Definitely, before the win over Carolina, definitely hurt their profile. But these guys can play. They've got Cal Girard at the faceoff dot, who's terrific. They've made a move to Buck Cunningham, a lefty between the pipes. Everybody talks about Ben Johnson, but Ben Johnson's really just kind of a facilitator these days. You know, you have guys like Colsey and Slope that are scoring the goals. This'll be a matchup too of two of the best short stick D middies in the country, and Jack Pilling from Richmond and Aiden McGuire from Duke. My question mark is, will this moment be too big for Richmond, for a team that hasn't been there? And you mentioned the Atlantic 10, Ed. How about Denver all those years would play such a great out-of-conference schedule and then kind of go underground with the Big East that wasn't all that competitive when they were ruling the roost, and then they come back out and we'd be like, oh, well, they've been beating up on this team and that team, and then they, you know, go to the NCAA tournament, won a national championship in 15, and then do a couple other championship weekend Final Four. So, that's a question that I have, but I think with the way this ball club is coached, their makeup, what they've been through, I think they're built for the moment, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm going to say that the Spiders rise to the occasion in this great atmosphere and get a W, winning their first NCAA home game. So I think Ed and I are aligned with that one as well.
Who's the best Spider-Man of all time? Is it Tobey Maguire? Is it Tom Holland? Like, who is?
That was going to be our give and go.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Some say it's okay. Even Aiden O'Neill.
Let's say it's
Aiden O'Neill. No, it's Tobey Maguire. Hands down.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Just like who's the best Batman? I'm Christian Bale all the way.
Michael Keaton guy?
Michael Keaton, he was okay.
Yeah.
Christian Bale just took it to another level. Also really helped that he had incredible actors playing the villains. Tom Hardy with being Bane and Heath Ledger, that legendary Joker performance.
Oh, what about Adam West?
That's the name I was trying to pull.
Come on, Ed.
He was the best.
That TV series was amazing.
I can see you dressed up like Robin.
The Batman of our youth. All right, let's move on to Sunday, May 10th, Mother's Day. And the first game is the Jacksonville Dolphins, winners of their first ever NCAA tournament game on Wednesday night against Robert Morris on the road. They'll advance to go to South Bend, take on the number 2 seeded Notre Dame Fighting Irish, who are 10-2 on the season. This game will be at noon. Notre Dame has been one of the top teams all season. Some great wins. And they basically pulled with Princeton taking the number 1 seed, but as an AQ, they're like the top at-large seed in the tournament. This should be a great start to Sunday. And Dixie, I'll give you the first crack at your analysis.
This game will be Jay Alter and Matt Ward live from Arlotta Stadium. Shout out to our friend Ray Carnicelli, probably doing backflips in his living room tonight with Jacksonville not only making the tournament, but beating Robert Morris to advance to a date with the Fighting Irish. You look at this Jacksonville team, and we said early in the season they were going to be tough. Overtime loss to open the season to Rutgers, 1-goal loss to North Carolina. Then they lose to Duke 16-10, but they were in that game. But you look at their body of work in the conference, 16-10, 14-1, lose to Utah 9-8, 27-7, 17-7, 18-3, and 16-7, now 13-7. So this is a team that's been dominant over their competition over the last 5-6 weeks. And they're playing with house money. They're going into Arlotta. They got to make that crappy trip to South Bend. And no one's really expecting much of them. I remember years ago when Detroit Mercy made this tournament and had to go to South Bend and was beating Notre Dame for most of the game by like 4 or 5 goals. And then Notre Dame went 10-man and their talent, their depth took over. I see Jacksonville being similar in the challenge to Notre Dame. You know, a team that, for whatever reason, just doesn't match up well with Virginia. But everybody else, they didn't, you know, they won against. Sean Light, Tewarton finalist. Richard Delly's upped his game between the pipes. You know, Notre Dame, they still, to me, are a little bit of enigma. And what I mean by that is I still don't think they played their best game. And will it happen over the next, you know, this weekend or over the next couple of weeks should they advance?
Yeah, I didn't realize this, but Jacksonville is one of only three teams ranked in the top five in the nation in both scoring offense and scoring defense. The others are Richmond and Duke.
Wow.
So
I'm not a big stat guy, Ed, so thank you for pulling that out.
I'm surprised by that.
Generally inter Rustle in.
I think it speaks, though, to how much I have overlooked Jacksonville. You know, I tend to think that, you know, they're just beating up on their conference opponents and, you know, sort of glotting their way to the NCAA tournament. But, you know, as Mark laid out, they've played non-conference opponents, strong non-conference opponents, particularly opponents who are in the field right now. And, you know, they've taken them to the end. It hasn't been easy. So I think Jacksonville has a chance, obviously, because if they get in a roll, they could do some things. But I tend to just go with how versatile and how strong Notre Dame is on seemingly every aspect of the field, both offense, defense, face-offs. You know, it's just a well-run program under Kevin Corrigan, and they have, you know, so many horses at so many different positions that they can rely on. So, I think it'd be a huge upset, and I wouldn't turn it down if Jacksonville did it. But if I had to, you know, put my mortgage on a team, I'm going with Notre Dame.
Notre Dame is a 5.5-goal favorite in this game. The line's already out right after the two play-in games already available. Yeah, you got to go with Notre Dame in this one. I'm with Ed. All right, second game of the day. The other play-in winner, Marist, is 12-4 now on the season. Marist is the winner of the MAC automatic qualifier and will play at number one overall seed Princeton, 13-2 on the season. The number one RPI, the automatic qualifier as the Ivy League champion. This game will be at 2:30. The Tigers, are you ready for this line? 10.5-goal favorites.
Damn.
Whoa.
10.5 goal favorites. That is a fat line.
Yikes.
This game's at 2:30. Ed, what does Marist need to do to get a win or keep this a close game?
Maybe find a way to send Princeton out of the country. I don't know. I mean, I'll be honest, you know, I expected Stony Brook to be here because I saw them play Towson last Saturday in the CAA final, and I was very impressed with what I saw from Stony Brook and how well they played against Towson, especially after Towson scored the game's first two goals. I thought this was going to be a runaway moment. But clearly, Marist is a team that's deserving of being on the stage, and, you know, they deserve to be here, and, you know, maybe they can do some things as well. I go back to, I saw Princeton, I don't want to say upset, but defeat Maryland back in February. And they're just so good offensively. I mean, Nate Kabiri is a wizard with the ball, particularly on that end of the field. And, you know, he runs that offense to perfection. So, and then Ryan Craddock was the best goalie on the field. And you know, I'm not sure much has changed my opinion that, you know, that he's one of the top goalkeepers in the country. And so when you have two anchors on both ends of the field like that, I think it's hard to defeat a team like Princeton. And, you know, they were dominant in the Ivy League and, you know, coasting their way, not coasting, but, you know, showing that dominance again in the Ivy League tournament and winning the championship. So I'm not sure I agree with the goal differential in terms of bets, but I will say that I do like Princeton heavily in this game.
Congratulations to the Red Foxes, their first NCAA tournament win in 11 years. So it's been a long time coming in Poughkeepsie to get the job done. Dave Scarcello, head coach, Amerist grad, nonetheless. Really proud moment for that program. I tell you what, I was watching a little bit of that Marist Stony Brook game, and I'm with Ed. Like, I mean, that's a Stony Brook team that ended, what, a 25-game winning streak for Towson in the CAA. Mm-hmm. Mickey Weishauer, you know, premature end to his career, and, you know, Matt Nyland was playing so well between the pipes. But Marist goalie Richie Metzger was terrific. He made several eye-popping saves. He'll need to, I mean, they could use three Richie Metzgers in this game. And that's no disrespect to Marist. That's how good Princeton is offensively. We talked about omissions from the Tuoratan list. A lot of folks are really upset. Chad Palumbo was not included. I mean, I think Tucker Wade is a terrific middie for Princeton as well. Short stick D middies are solid. The defense is improved. You know, this is a team that a lot of folks are, you know, I'm seeing a lot of jackalopes put out like their brackets, like anybody really cares. But a lot of Princeton not only going to Charlottesville, but getting to at least the championship game, if not hoisting the gold trophy. So this is a team that is they're rolling heavy right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're overwhelming favorites, and I will agree and take the Princeton Tigers in this one to move on to the quarterfinals. Game number three of the day, 5 o'clock on ESPNU. Yale, 9-5, will take on the number 6 seed Syracuse Orange, who's 11-5. Both of these teams were at-large selections, and they will meet at 5 o'clock. Can the Orange be beat in the dome?
We're going to find out. I mean, they're definitely different in the dome. This is a young Yale team. Interesting note, if you listen to the committee, it looked like the last team in was Yale and the last team out was Maryland. How about the irony that Andy Shea and the Yale Bulldogs end the college careers of 3 Yale transfers now playing for the Maryland Terrapins? I found that to be a little interesting. Andy Shea jokes that this team needs permission slips and car seats because they're so young. Leave it to Coach Shea to sandbag you. This is a really talented Yale team. Connor Gately was ready last year to take over the offense, but had to wait his turn. He's been sensational. 25 goals, 29 assists. They're getting good play between the pipes from Ben Friedman, 56% save percentage. Look, we saw it last year in the dome where Syracuse struggled against Harvard, a team that couldn't face off. Only won about 30% of their faceoffs coming into the game. And for that game, won maybe like 18%. Yale faces off better. We're going to see a good game. You know, these are two teams that like to talk a lot of smack. They like to be physical. And Syracuse is going to try to bully this Yale team. But I'm not so sure that they can be bullied, you know, because I don't think they know any better because they're so young. So this will be a great game. This one again is Anish and Quint doing that kind of Western New York swing, Central New York swing. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I only know Syracuse from watching their game against Maryland. They looked very impressive on both sides of the field, particularly offensively. And even though that was only a 13-11 score, I thought that Syracuse pretty much dictated the tempo of that game. I'm surprised, though. I looked at the stats. Offensively, Syracuse is 14th in the country. Yale is 20th. Defensively, Syracuse 27th, Yale's 31st. These two teams are fairly evenly matched. I assume that Syracuse would be much better in offense, you know, due to guys like Joey Spallina, Luke Roa, and those guys. Unfortunately, I don't know much about Yale. But I'm going to lean again with Syracuse. I think playing at home in the Carrier Dome is an immense advantage for them, and one that they're going to play up heavily. I like Yale. I like Andy Shea. He's always been a good person to media, especially someone who likes to talk to us and doesn't mind when we ask silly questions. But in terms of on the field performance, I like Syracuse in this game.
I like the Cuse also. This is a vaunted Syracuse senior class. This will be their last game in the Dome. And I'm going to take the Cuse, who are 3.5 goal favorites also, in one of the biggest overs of the game. This is a 24.5 over under. I'm going to take Syracuse. And the final game of the weekend, Georgetown, Big East regular season and tournament champions, 10-4 on the season, will take on number 5 Virginia in Charlottesville, Clockner Stadium. Virginia talked about very much on our podcast how they rebounded throughout the season. They are the winners of the ACC Tournament Championship. This will be a 7:30 game to cap off the weekend. And Ed, I'll let you have your first go-round on this game.
Yeah, I have to admit, I have a bias. I've always liked Kevin Warren as coach at Georgetown. He's always been a funny guy, but one that he loves to banter with the media. And so I've always liked his teams, and I think he's built that program to where they're competitive nationally every year. The one thing that troubles me about Georgetown is they've played strong teams non-conference wise, but they didn't fare too well against them this year. Notre Dame, Ohio State, Richmond. Those were all losses, but you know, they also lost to Syracuse. You know, they did beat Denver, but then outside of that, you know, they haven't really been challenged, especially in their conference. So I'm curious to find out exactly what kind of team this Georgetown group is. And I go back to Virginia running hot at this point. I was talking with Mike Preston earlier because we were going over these games as well. And he pointed out that this Virginia team reminds him of the 2016 North Carolina team that got hot at the end. And they carried that momentum into the NCAA tournament, eventually winning the championship against Maryland in the final. So he was saying, well, maybe this Virginia team could do the same thing. And I hadn't thought about that until he mentioned it. And sure, why not? Why can't we say that Virginia has just as strong odds to win the national title as the other teams? They're playing so well. And I think a carrot dangling in front of them is the idea that they could play the Final Four and championship game at home. That would be a huge motivation, huge incentive for them. In terms of picking a winner, my heart says Georgetown, my head says Virginia. So I'm going to say Virginia.
The difference between that's a good parallel to the 2016 Carolina team. The difference there is, though, Carolina had to go on the road, and their first round game was in Milwaukee against Marquette, winning that game, whereas Virginia gets a home game. But you're not, Mike's not the first person to talk about that. The other team that I'll compare this edition of the Cavaliers to is the 2011 team, where Shamel Bratton was the prime guy, along with his brother Rummel. And then Shamel left the team, and the offense was given to Steel Stanwyck. Why do I bring this up? Because early in the season, everything ran through McCabe Millen. And now the offense runs a little bit more through his brother, Brendan, who's a freshman, with McCabe coming out of the box, and you've seen much greater productivity and a lot less turnovers from McCabe Millen. this is a Virginia team right now that's clicking on all cylinders. They're getting good goaltending. They're facing off well, even though Henry Metz, they use three face-off guys, Griff Mayer, Henry Metz, and Andrew Greenspan. Metz went down with an upper body injury, it looked like, in the ACC championship against Carolina. You know, Virginia's, they're just clicking offensively right now. They look really, really smooth. They look really, really sharp. And Lars Tiffany is looking prophetic after that Maryland game where he said, we just turned our season around. And people are like, wait a minute, you just lost in three overtimes. How's that turn your season around? Well, they've been playing great lacrosse ever since. Maybe no team had a greater challenge to the beginning of this season than Georgetown. Season opener against Loyola, canceled. Or postponed, because then they replayed it. The next week against Hopkins, canceled and not rescheduled. Then they go and play Penn and win 12-9. Then they go to Notre Dame, and it's like, okay, it's too cold to play outside. We're going to play in Loftus with no video stream. They lose that game. Then they lose to Ohio State. Then they lose to Richmond. And you're kind of like, what's going on with these guys? But Georgetown's played solid lacrosse. Eighth consecutive year they've won the Big East. Pretty wild when you consider, you know, running a conference for that long. What I like about Georgetown, they've been so top heavy with the Connor brothers all year, Rory and Liam. But in the Big East championship game, a 14-6 win over Providence, Kevin Miller had a hat trick. Jack Schubert scored two goals. Joe Sazer scored two goals. Lucas Dedeman scored two goals. So they're getting some scoring from other places, and they're going to need that not only against Virginia on Sunday night, but throughout this NCAA tournament if they want to make a run.
Guys, giving me some great analysis here. The Cavaliers are 2.5 goal favorites. I'm like with Ed, heart versus head. I'm going to go with my head and take Virginia as well to round out the my picks for this week. Great, incredible slate of first-round games. Make your plans. Clear your schedules. Get ready to post up in front of ESPNU for 20 hours this weekend to watch these games. It's going to be so much fun. All right, quickly, give and go. For you guys, you cover so many games each year. You spend a lot of time in press boxes. Those February games where you're just hoping that it's dry and warm. So the give and go is for you two. Favorite press boxes and game watching experiences around the country. And a few things to consider. This is what our listeners want to hear. The press box itself, you know, how nice is it? You know, what's your view like? What kind of parking you get as media credentialed folks? Kind of food they might serve in the press box? The general game atmosphere? How friendly and helpful the staff is? What kind of Wi-Fi do they have in the press box? I want to know all that kind of stuff. What are the details? Dixie, you've been all over the Big Ten, all over the ACC, especially. And then you've made trips all over. Ed, you're mostly covering the Maryland schools, but you're covering some on the Big Ten. I'll let Ed start as our guest. What are some of your favorite experiences in to cover, Ed?
Oh, one of my favorites is Hofstra. And this is going to sound ridiculous, but they have a fridge that they stock with all sorts of drinks for media. So many varieties of soda and teas and lemonades. It's amazing. And so I love it. And parking there is not a problem, although, you know, I suggest getting there early, especially for NCAA quarterfinal games. But also, to me, it's a great vantage point to watch games. You're not too far removed from the field. It's not like watching ants running around like, unfortunately, some stadiums are. So I like Hofstra. Another one I like is Loyola. Ridley is an amazing stadium, arena, whatever you want to call it. Great vantage points, easy to see where the ball is, and then their scoreboard is one of the best. And then the staff there is so quick about getting the video up. So even if I miss a play, it's right there on the scoreboard. And so that's so helpful for me as a media member. But my number one choice is Hopkins. You're on the 50-yard line. You're so close to the action. It's great to hear what the crowd is saying, especially, you know, Hopkins fans get upset when a penalty isn't called, or, you know, let's say Maryland fans get upset when, you know, a goal is disallowed or something like that. The staff is top notch. I mean, Ernie and Jill are some of the best in the country. Wi-Fi isn't an issue. It's easy to hop on and hop off and to do your job. And then when they renovated the press box and put in new seats, that made my job easier. So I'm going to go with the press box at Hopkins being the best to watch college cross games.
When did they renovate the press box?
They renovated the press box at Hopkins? When?
Well, they put in new seating and desks. Okay. So that was, I'm going to say, at least 2 or 3 years ago.
You don't get to spend much time down there.
Yeah, yeah. You're in the TV booth. So
right.
That's TV, almost like Alaska where you guys are.
Yeah.
And on top of the roof. Well, we love Ernie. Hall of Famer, by the way. He recently got into the Johns Hopkins Athletic Hall of Fame. Well deserved. But it's great to hear you. I got to check out this new press box. I spent a lot of time in there with the old setup. I got to see the new setup. Dixie, what are your thoughts?
I agree with it's been a minute since I've been to Hofstra, but I enjoy Hofstra. And what was the other place you mentioned, Ed? Sorry.
Loyola.
Loyola. Yeah, obviously I haven't called a game at Loyola in quite some time, but yeah, both great. And Ryan Eigenbrode always provides Chick-fil-A, if memory serves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. That might be number one seed for food. I
mean, there you go.
Hopkins usually has great sandwiches.
But they do.
It's hard to beat Chick-fil-A.
But normally, food and lacrosse do not mix. We don't get anything. So Maryland in Tizer Tower, they have a fridge. And first game we went in was Virginia, Maryland. Some sodas, waters, perfect, right? Season went on. They stopped stocking that fridge. There's nothing.
They didn't even lock it. It's still locked.
So, the Carrier Dome or JMA Wireless Dome is a favorite of mine. Just for the sight lines and the excitement. You know, Klockner is a cool environment, but you're outside. You're outside to the right, which can be a challenge if you have a big crowd. Thankfully they moved this from the left side. If you're facing the field from the press box, we used to be to the left, but was right under a speaker, which was a challenge. That's why I think they moved it to the right hand side. It's much, much better. I enjoy all the Big Ten venues. Rutgers was just there last weekend. This Jordan Ozer does an amazing job there. Every now and again, he'll get us a little bit of crispy pizza. That's the go-to spot in Piscataway. I enjoy Michigan. Those guys always, Scott Kemp's is no longer the SID there, but even though he's not the SID, he still works games and he'll supply Maize and Blue, which is stellar. But you know, look, Hopkins is the worst when it's really, really cold. But Ernie did us a solid this year for the Robert Morris Hopkins game, which was rescheduled to 2 days later because the temperature went from being, I think, 4 degrees up to 14 degrees. So it was warm enough to play. But he put us in the president's box. So we were inside calling that game. It was awesome. And I can't remember if we were I don't think we were there for the Loyola game. We were back up top, but it was a little warmer for that game. And the sandwiches, you know that there's always going to be sandwiches in there as well as waters, which is great. So, and even, you know, the Hopkins Maryland game this year that I did with Clark was just next level in terms of the crowd and the excitement and, you know, just everything that goes along with it. So, yeah, Homewood gets a vote for me too.
Right. I love to hear it. That's a good list. I knew you guys are experts and well-traveled broadcasters and journalists. So I appreciate your thoughts on
and
that.
And I tell you the other one too, I called a women's quarterfinal there last year, and then I called the Hopkins game, and I'll be back this weekend is Dorrance. You know, great sight lines. I mean, I tell you that the crowd for that Duke Carolina game was terrific, because you're completely surrounded by, and the stands are elevated and the field is lower. So, I mean, everywhere you look, you're looking up at people, which was pretty cool. So I'll give a shout out to Dorrance as well.
Sounds like a great place to stop. A reminder, the Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Special thanks to this week's guest, Ed Lee. Thanks again for joining us. Do us a favor, subscribe, leave an app, review, tell a friend, share the love, pass this on to somebody who loves lacrosse. It's free, and we appreciate it. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at dfly@dixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram @dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening, and as always, enjoy the games.